The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. It is currently about 8 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. We have a guest today on the phone because he happens to be out on Lake Huron as we speak. It is Captain Luke Clyburn. He's with the Pride of Michigan, a research vessel that's going to be coming to the Thumb next month. And we're going to be talking about why you're coming to the Thumb and about the vessel itself. And I thank you for taking time with us today.
Craig, it's good to be with you today. We're actually working on one of our other little research vessels this morning. The Pride of Michigan is docked at the NOAA site in Alpena. We've been there teaching a class to the Alpena Community College and Marine Tech. It's all underwater science programs. So I have students on board the Intersea Explorer, which is a little 28-foot research vessel. And we have divers getting ready to go down and do a study on an ancient forest. It's 25 feet underwater, and there's rooted tree stumps that are carbon dated at 7,560 years old.
So they are ancient by my terms, anyway. And now your Pride of Michigan is how big of a vessel?
The Pride of Michigan is 80 feet. We use the Pride of Michigan for training Navy Sea Cadets, and we train the cadets in underwater science as well as just basic open water. When we come into Harbor Beach next week, we'll be bringing a crew of cadets that are coming in from all of the United States. They are coming on board to learn diving. We also will be teaching them about the Great Lakes and about the tremendous treasure that the state of Michigan has in their underwater resources.
So you're a teaching vessel and you're a research vessel all wrapped into one, and it's through the Noble Odyssey Foundation?
Noble Odyssey Foundation is how we get grants and how we raise dollars. The Sea Cadet program was created by Congress, but only limited funding. So we have to raise funds through either grants. Well, we're not a vessel for hire, so we have to raise money in other ways to cover the cost of the young people, whether they're doing the training and the science projects.
How do you get your projects? Do people submit what they'd like to have you do? Is there an organization that looks for things that need to be researched? How does that happen?
Craig, that's one of the reasons that we've tied in with the Alpena Community College programs, because they have scientists there that have interest in water resources. And we're training people at the college as well as the Sea Cadets on how to best study these resources and what tools do they need to really get into the marine tech field working on the Great Lakes. I think one of the greatest treasures that the United States has is this large volume of fresh water. And we have to train people and develop an interest in taking care of the lakes and studying the history. A neat part of our project is that what we've been working on, the focus of the Noble Odyssey Foundation and the Pride of Michigan, has really been following the lake levels after the glacier. So we're going back to the last glacier, which was approximately 10,000 years ago. And when we look at the shorelines where the Great Lakes are today, that is not where people would have lived 10,000 years ago. The lakes were much shallower. The beaches, we're looking at areas 110 feet below present level.
I know I had been watching something like a Discovery Channel, and they had what they called a land bridge. It was actually a portion of land that stretched from like Alpena southeastward over to Canada.
Craig, we're working on right on the south edge of that land bridge, and that's one of the things that has brought us into this area. During the time that the stumps were growing and above water that we're diving on today, they would have been exposed at the time the land bridge was crossable. And part of the work that we're doing right here ties into that complete study. But where I'm have the boat moored, where we're floating right out here in Lake Huron, we're looking right across where that land bridge existed. And you've got a 100-mile land bridge running from Alpena, Thunder Bay, running across to Ambury, Ontario. And that would have been the lower edge of Lake Huron right after the glacier. At the time that we're looking, there was not a Lake St. Clair, there was not a St. Clair River, there was not the Detroit River. People were virtually crossing at the lower edge of Lake Huron, which is where we are today.
Well, at that time, the lakes weren't connected. Lake Michigan didn't get in over to Lake Huron under the Mackinac Bridge. None of that was going on.
There was a river, and part of our studies has been to follow. There's a river that is 80 miles long that runs to the Straits of Mackinac. That would have been draining or connecting Lake Michigan with Lake Huron, and the waters were going out not through the Detroit River system, the South system. They were going out through Georgian Bay and out of the Ottawa River into the St. Lawrence.
Wow.
And the riverbed that we're studying in the Straits, which is, as well is a very, very unique study, people would have been living. It's 110 feet below present level and then drops down into a riverbed, and in some places 300 feet deep. But in that river system, we've located an underwater waterfall. It's drowned. It's no longer a waterfall, but it's covered. But you can see the evidence of where it existed 7,000-8,000 years ago. We've located a cave that overlooks that waterfall, where it's another major study that the university needs to pick up, because that cave could have been a shelter for people that were living along that riverbed, you know, during that 7,000-year period.
So the lakes are in a constant state of flux and change, and we kind of take for granted the way they look today.
There's no question. What people don't realize, and since the beginning of the world, there's been many, many ice age periods. And we feel like that the ice age periods last about 100,000 years in a cycle that is very much like our winter, summer. You have a constant heating and cooling of the Earth's surface. And the scientists really don't know exactly why, but through the cores of ice that they can take out of the Greenland or out of the Antarctic, they can study those weather patterns millions of years ago. And you run into these ice age periods, which, as I said, about 100,000 years. And we're actually in one of the warming periods right now, and have been. And we're very fortunate that we're not covered with ice, but the glaciers are an interesting study. As glaciers receded, the pressures in the crust of the Earth have changed. The lake levels have changed. When you have the glaciers, the waters hit the poles rather than being on the surface as a liquid. And so there's a constant rising and falling.
Now, the research you're doing right now near Alpena, you're trying to find evidence that there were people there? Is that what you're basically looking for?
We have evidence of tree stumps and evidence of shorelines. What we're looking for is evidence of a culture that existed along those shorelines during that period of time. There's work being done by the University of Michigan following caribou trails that cross the land bridge to Ambury. There's a Dr. John O'Shea who's doing a very excellent job of that study. But there's what we find and realize that there's so much that's unknown about what's in our backyard. You know, we know very, very little about what's under the Great Lakes from a historical standpoint.
Does the fresh water, cold temperatures, and not much of a current at that part of the lake kind of help you in your quest that there may still be stuff there?
Well, the fact that we can find rooted tree stumps that's 7,569 years old, it's not petrified. If I took a piece of tree stump, put it on the beach, it would dry out and look just like any other wood that we have today. It's a large cedar type of wood, very common on Great Lakes today. There really probably wasn't a lot of difference the way the Earth looked 7,000 years ago, other than the fact that the Great Lakes were much more shallow. And people would have been walking across what we now have Lake Huron as being, a vast amount of water. It would have been totally different.
Would that have been used as a trading route?
There is some good evidence that it could have been used as a trading route. part of what we're looking at as well, and we have a movie that will be coming out soon on PBS yet this year, and this will be a movie that will talk about America's oldest industry, and that's copper. And we are following the copper trail coming out of the Superior country and heading, people were taking copper and mining copper in large amounts off of Al Royal. And right here in Besler Museum in Alpena, you can find copper that was located in this area, which came out of those mines. So copper was traded and moved. We worked on another project, which wasn't quite as interesting as copper, but it was chert that was taken out of Norwood, which is over by Charlevoix. That chert is identifiable to a very specific location. And that chert, which is also, it's like a flint that they made tools out of. And that you can find in all across the eastern part of the United States. So there's major trade routes.
And that's something that's particular to the area, say like the Petoskey stone, that you only find it in one particular place.
The Norwood chert is an area probably 10 or 15 miles square. And it's a chert that has a particular red band in it, and it's very identifiable to that one specific area. So it's very, very traceable. The question is that were people coming into that area mining the chert to make tools, or were they taking quantities of that chert somewhere else and making tools and trading it for whatever? And again, that's an industry that was taking place like the copper 5 to 10,000 years ago. We know a little bit about our history 2,000, 3,000 years ago for this part of the world. We know very, very little about what took place in the 5 to 10,000. Prior to the 10,000, it would have all been covered with glaciers, so there wouldn't be probably a lot you could find. But part of the Noble Odyssey's function is taking students, developing an interest, and looking for these things, and use their eyeballs to go underwater and really search areas that we can't search with any kind of electronic equipment.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been diving on the Great Lakes for 50 years, but we've had the cadet program and training. I've been running the Noble Odyssey boats for 35 years.
So you're like the freshwater Jacques Cousteau?
Well, I have a lot of respect for Jacques Cousteau. When I was young, he was this individual who created a lot of interest around the world for people to get into diving. I had the opportunity to work with his son, Jean-Michel Cousteau, about 4 years ago, right here in Thunder Bay on Lake Huron. And I think if there's anything that we have in common, it's just a curiosity about what makes this part of the world unique.
And we were talking a little bit before the program that the diving and technology, that's changed many times over in your tenure.
We're still pumping air the same way. We've got, I would think, better equipment than what I started off with, but the old Jacques Cousteau equipment that was developed back in the 40s is still basically the same technology. Rebreathers that are the up-and-coming, popular with divers for many reasons. The Navy was using that, 50 years ago. So the technology is, I think, getting better, but you still have the same rules and regulations that you have to follow. Diving, has, you've got to follow the rules or you get hurt. And that's what we so much time on with our program, is not just the diving and how to do the underwater research, but how to take care of problems. If you did have equipment failure, you had something go wrong.
So you're teaching the young people that are taking part in this, important information, and probably the most important is not to panic.
If you panic, whether you're flying an airplane or diving underwater, you're going to be in big trouble. Most of the situations you can work out by using good judgment, by having redundant systems. But It's a matter of the thought process and making sure that you plan your dive and then dive that plan.
I mean, you were, well, your equipment, as far as the diving, is pretty much, well, based on the original. The technology you use for documenting what you find, that has changed.
Documenting has changed a tremendous amount. And we have been involved with filming. Our first major film that we did was in 1982, and that was on a shipwreck up in Lake Superior called The Emperor. And that film was shown on PBS, and the name of the film was Angels of the Sea, talking about the divers going down and taking care of the shipwrecks and making sure that they were preserved properly. And during that film, our ship that we used at that time was named the Noble Odyssey for the film, and that's where our foundation name came from. But the technology that's changed, we did the film on Lake Superior. I was using 16-millimeter cameras. The cost of the film, we're shooting 100-foot rolls, and the total processing was about $400. We had no way of knowing what we were shooting until the film was processed. Today, we're using high-definition digital cameras that we can look and see. We can come back up on the ship, put it on a monitor. We know the film that we have shot is good quality and usable film.
I imagine you also get better control of light and other things that the old film was just you got what you got, and maybe they can fix it in post-production.
That was a lot of truth. You know, that first film that we shot on Isle Royale, we had it all set up to where every day we would meet with a seaplane who was going to take our film stock. We were going to send it back to Houghton, Michigan, then put it on an airplane, get it back to Detroit to the studios in Detroit to process, and then let us know if we needed more light, if what we were getting. We used some very large lighting systems that were unique in the industry, and we're lucky we got footage, but an awful lot of it was corrected after it got back to the studio and was being put together in the film. Today, I've got cameras that virtually can see more than what my eyesight can see. They can almost see in the dark, and it really boils down to where it makes it more pleasing to an audience, and they have a better understanding about what we really see underwater. And the better that equipment is, the better story we can come back and tell.
Because you're a vessel that is in training with the young people, do you have to kind of limit the depth of your dives? Because the deeper you go, the more dangerous it is.
That is correct. With the students, they reach a level. Recreational diving goes down to 120 feet. We've got seniors that have, you know, we've got different levels of students. And one of the reasons that we got involved with a lot of the work we're doing now, this is 25 feet of water. This is a very diveable area for people that haven't had a lot of experience. But we have some of the studies that we're doing in 75, 80 feet of water. And we have students who have gone through a lot of qualification to get to that point to where we feel they're capable. Now, again, we don't have students diving by themselves. We have adults, dive masters, that are diving and heading up each team. That team is instructed on what we expect them to get out of the project, what they're looking for, and then carrying on any emergency procedures that we would need, even right to getting the people out of the water and back on board the boat. So while we're teaching techniques, we're teaching a lot of safety.
Now, you're in the Thunder Bay area right now, but you are coming to our area. Are you coming just basically for a visit, or are there plans to actually do some research in our area?
We're going to be. We've got two purposes. We've got probably 18 young people coming in from all of the United States to get on board and train on board the Pride of Michigan. They will receive Navy type of training of ship operations, standing watches, what have you. But we will also be offering a basic open water dive program. We're using facilities in Harbor Beach that they've made available for that training. So in the morning, we'll be working with the cadets who have not had the experience of diving, and we'll start right off with the basics. In the afternoon, we're going to be doing a research project on the Harbor Beach light. And what we want to do is go down and take our research divers and at the foundation of the light, look to see if there is any deterioration. That light is being turned over to the Historical Society in Harbor Beach. We feel that they need to know, and we want to help them know, what is the condition of the foundation of the light. And we can do that with both film and as well as visual inspection.
When we look at that huge break wall in Harbor Beach, and you think that's, you know, immovable, but then we had that ice that one year that took a chunk out of it, so it is possible there could be some damage down there you could find.
That we would be looking at, and we'll be covering, you know, it's a long seawall there, but we're going to do as much of that as we can while we're there, and this won't be just a one stop. If we can find interest, then, you know, we've already in that area down in off Lexington, we have another drowned forest that we located stumps some years ago, and we did a complete study with Oakland University on that drowned forest. We found that off of the Harbor Beach area, off the Port Austin area, there again will be the possibility of finding evidence of people that lived here 70,000 years ago.
Well, if you find any fishing lures, don't think they're that old, because there are a lot of people out there fishing too.
That makes a good collection for divers. There are divers that, especially on inland lakes, are just looking for fishing lures, and they find some that go back nearly 100 years, and those are quite collectible.
How long do you plan to stay in Harbor Beach? Is this something that's going to take a week or so or more to do?
Well, I wish we could stay all summer, but our schedule won't allow that. We're going to be in Harbor Beach. We'll actually start getting on board the ship on Tuesday evening with a new crew of cadets that are coming in for the training. We will be in Harbor Beach through Saturday, and my understanding is that Sunday we'll get underway and we'll come back in the Thunder Bay area, and we will finish up the trip doing some diving here on the forest where they can see it, and then leaving the ship in Alpena, because this is working with the community college up here is a new part of our program. And the Alpena Community College has a lot of educational type of things that we're tying in and very uniquely with the work of the Noble Odyssey and the Pride of Michigan.
With an 81-foot vessel, you probably have to look for harbors that can accommodate that.
On the Great Lakes, we have a tremendous amount of harbor refuges that were built 100 years ago when there were many vessels out sailing. Those harbors, a lot of them are silted in. A lot of them need work done to be available for boats. And again, that's part of the awareness that we try to create on the Great Lakes, is that this is a tremendous resource, but with that resource, there's also a responsibility of maintaining those harbors for a harbor of safety, and an area where the people of Michigan can have for recreational purposes, which is a big part of what makes Michigan the greatest state in all of the United States.
Okay. If people are interested in learning about this, becoming part of your crew, how does one go about being a sea cadet? How do they get on board to take part in some of this research? Is there a process?
The Sea Cadet program was created by Congress. It's a national program. Approximately 11,000 young people today of high school age that are part of the Sea Cadet program. Michigan has 5 Sea Cadet units that are presently training. We're working on developing some more. But if you go online to our website for the Sea Cadets, is greatlakesdivision.org. And lakes is plural, but greatlakesdivision.org. And on that, there's a link that ties into the National Sea Cadet Program. And there they have a unit locator. And you can very easily go through that system, click on, and find out what the closest Sea Cadet unit is in an area. And these are programs that are basically training cadets at Navy bases or Coast Guard stations around the Great Lakes. And you know, we operate, our main operation has been out of White Lake, Michigan, Mount Clemens, Michigan. But we have Sea Cadet units in Detroit, in Macomb County. There's Sea Cadet programs in Lansing, Grand Rapids. But you can go onto the website and click on and find out what unit is close to you.
And they'll probably give you all the details as to age requirements, what type of parental permission you need, all these things to get the ball rolling.
Those are all on the website. And the basic age is 13 to 17. Young people can graduate from the Sea Cadet program. They can go into the Navy or Coast Guard at the rate that they earn as a cadet, which is usually gives them about a year and a half advantage in the military, which means more dollars. We have young people that find out military is not what they want, and then they go on into universities or they go into other colleges, such as the Alpena Community College. You get into a Marine Tech program to where, you know, you still have discipline when you're out to sea, but it's not always the same as the military discipline. So we have something really for everybody, and our main purpose is to develop a maritime interest for American youth.
And that's the only way to keep the interest going, is to get the kids interested.
We have so much here that people basically haven't taken the time to really look at.
Now, when you come to Harbor Beach, are people going to be able to actually come on board and see what you have going and the facilities you have there?
Because of the amount of equipment, you know, depending on the dock location, we take people on board, we give them tours of the ship. And I don't know in Harbor Beach exactly how the facility is set up, but we will accommodate people. And we will also have displays set up showing some of the rooted tree stumps that are carbon dated at 7,000 years. We will have displays talking about all the projects that we've done on the Great Lakes. And my understanding is that while I am there, I'm going to put on a program for the community. And I'm not sure the exact time of that, but that will be giving a complete history of the Noble Odyssey Foundation and our training on board our ships, the Pride of Michigan.
Now, when you do the survey of the Lighthouse Foundation, are you folks going to be putting together something at the end, a film, a report, or how does that work?
We will be doing filming of the basic of the lighthouse, basically just giving a briefing. And we hope that we can develop enough interest in that project to raise grant money, to raise funding. These projects are extremely expensive. You know, just maintaining a ship like the Pride of Michigan is, you know, a couple of thousand dollars a day just for operation.
I don't even want to think of the gas bill or the diesel bill.
Well, I just filled up. I ran the ship from Mount Clemens up to Alpena, and it was right at $3,000.
Oh, my gosh. No wonder our gas prices went up. There's a shortage now.
I would like to think that some of our research would ease some problems in the world, not add to them.
Oh, okay. I understand that when you come to Harbor Beach, you're also going to be taking on supplies. You're going to kind of help our little local economy out as well.
We make it a point to buy supplies in the communities that we are in. The money that we work with is normally money that we get out of the Sea Cadet program makes available funding that to help subsidize the training, and what monies we'd like to spend locally.
Well, terrific. Again, the website is www.greatlakes.org. And you get a lot of information about what you do and probably your itinerary and that. And I do appreciate you taking time with us today. And have you been to Harbor Beach before?
I have been to Harbor Beach a number of times and really enjoy Harbor Beach and the people that are there. I think it's unique to the Great Lakes. And one of the things that when we bring kids in from around the country, you know, there are kids who have never seen the Great Lakes. They think the lake is something they can drive around. They don't realize the vastness of it. But what really makes the Great Lakes wonderful are the communities around, and each community and how they developed is a little bit unique to the others. And we make it a point that these young people have as much opportunity to find out about the history of where they are and what makes not just Harbor Beach, but the entire Thumb area a very, very vital part of the state of Michigan.
And as you said, they come from around the country, so if you get into a Sea Cadet program in Michigan, you might actually end up somewhere else on either the lakes or elsewhere to do some research.
There's a Sea Cadet program, and the Sea Cadet program is basically Navy training. We're the only program that really does the type of research that we're doing, and we are kind of a specialty school where cadets come from other parts. But as a cadet, they can travel and go to other Sea Cadet programs for summer training. All over the world. We have cadets who go to Australia and work with Sea Cadets. We have cadets who go to China. There's a tremendous, tremendous amount of opportunities being a Navy Sea Cadet.
Well, I appreciate, again, you taking time with us today. I'll let you get back to your divers who are in the water, and we look forward to seeing you in Harbor Beach really soon.
Greg, I'm getting ready to put on a dry suit, grab a camera, and go down and do some filming. So we will have things wrapped up at the end of next week, and we'll be heading down, I think, on the 7th of July, and we'll be in Fort Austin for a day, and then we move down to Harbor Beach, and we will base our operations out of there. But thank you so much for your interest, and again, if anybody has interest, they can follow up on Great Lakes Division, greatlakesdivision.org, our main website, which is nobleodyssey.org. Either one, well, they link together, and they can go ahead and they can follow and find out the work of the Noble Odyssey Foundation and the Pride of Michigan.
Again, I thank you, and you've been listening to What Do You Think on WLEW.